Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle Rocklin, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hey there, welcome to The Dr. Nina Show. I am Dr. Nina Savelle Rocklin. I am a psychoanalyst specializing in food, weight, and body image issues, and I'm here to help you lose weight without dieting. That means no more counting calories or carbs, no more thinking about food all the time. It really is possible to lose weight and gain health, all without ever going on another diet. So today I have a special guest in the studio, Ryan Sheldon, founder of the blog Confessions of a Binge Eater. And let me tell you a little bit about Ryan. He's so awesome. We were just talking before the show, and I love him. You're going to love him too. So he hopes that by sharing his own personal struggles with binge eating disorder, with body image issues, and with all of the life-altering changes he made following his diagnosis, that he can help others create success stories of their own. And that means you. And additionally, he is really proud to be a voice for men with eating disorders and body image issues whose struggle with food oftentimes go unnoticed. And I hear that from men all the time. So if you're a guy and that resonates with you, please give us a call and join the conversation. The number is 818-602-4929. So, Confessions of a Binge Eater offers a shame-free community for eating disorder sufferers to come in and connect with one another, while also raising awareness. So, Ryan describes himself as having a big love of food and an even bigger personality, and he uses humor throughout his social media platforms. In addition to the blog, you can find him on Instagram at Binge Eater Confessions, where he encourages others who are suffering from the shame and embarrassment surrounding binge eating disorder and body image issues to take action and join him on the road to recovery. And he's also working on a book and a YouTube channel set to launch later this year. So welcome, Ryan.
Hey, Dr. Nina. Thank you for having me.
Great to have you here. So, I think that the listeners would be really interested in hearing more about how did you get here? Can you share your personal story?
Absolutely. So I'm 29 years old currently. I was diagnosed with binge eating disorder back in 2015. It was in March of 2015. I didn't know that I had an eating disorder prior to that. I didn't even know that anything was wrong with me. I knew that I had characteristics in my eating habits and the way I felt about my body that might have not been totally normal, but again, I never thought there was anything wrong with them. For an example, I would go to Taco Bell and I would spend $70. And I did this usually on my own, but one time I did it with one of my friends, and my friend said, "Ryan, what's wrong with you? Why did you just spend $70 at Taco Bell? That's not normal." I'm like, what do you mean that's not normal? My friend that I was with spent about $12 at Taco Bell. So, yeah, and I say, well, the prices have gone up, but that wasn't really accurate. So in 2015, I was sitting down at lunch with my friend, and my friend mentioned, I think she had saw a commercial for binge eating disorder, and she said, "Ryan, you should look this up." She's known me for about a decade, and she's like, "It seems like you might have this." So I Googled it right there at the table, and every symptom that it listed, I was experiencing. So I went to my doctor 2 days later and I told him, "Listen, I think I have binge eating disorder." And he really had no idea what it was.
Which is incomprehensible to me that 2 years ago, 2.5 years ago, a doctor did not know what binge eating disorder was.
The thing about that, though, and I agree with you, is that I guess because the DSM-5 finally now recognizes it as an actual eating disorder, as opposed to it just being in the spectrum of EDNOS.
Not otherwise specified, which God knows what that means, but still.
Totally. But the bigger concern was that he had no concept that I was even struggling with food or with my weight. I'd been going to this therapist, who I love, by the way, who's a great therapist, for 6 years. And during that time, my weight has fluctuated. During that time, I was going to Weight Watchers, and I would come in and I would sit in front of him and I would say, "I went to Weight Watchers. I gained 5 pounds this week. Not a conversation was had from that. The next week I would come back in and I would say, well, I went to Weight Watchers again and I gained 2 pounds. There was never a conversation at all about that. So my weight definitely fluctuated and it was never a conversation, you know, it never became a conversation during any of my therapy sessions, which looking back is really challenging and I struggle with that. In fact, I get mad at my therapist sometimes because of that.
I think I'm mad at your therapist just right now. I think that part of it is this idea that eating disorders or binge eating is kind of the purview of women and guys don't get eating disorders, right? And so maybe you can speak to your experience as what it's been like to kind of come out of the closet as a guy with binge eating disorder.
Totally. That's my favorite term, coming out of the closet with having an eating disorder. You know, before I knew what was happening with me, before I knew that I had an eating disorder, I was ashamed of my eating habits and the way I felt about myself. The minute, and this was life-changing for me, and it's why I'm extremely passionate about it, because the minute that I was diagnosed with an eating disorder, it changed my life entirely. It immediately removed all of the shame that was surrounding it, because what I now acknowledge was that this is a real thing. I'm struggling with a real disorder, and I don't want to give the impression that I use this as like a crutch or a blanket, that, okay, I have an eating disorder, now I know why I can eat so much. It wasn't anything to do with that. It was just like, wow, I'm not so abnormal. I'm struggling with an eating disorder, and at least 30 million people in America are struggling with eating disorders. So it was just like, okay, this is it. Let me go get help.
Yeah, I think one of the things that I like is your hashtag no shame, because so many people come in to see me or, you know, in my programs talk about the shame of it. And when you realize that it's not, you know, like I say often, it's not what you're eating that's the real problem, it's what's eating at you. And when you realize that binge eating is a form of trying to help yourself resolve something internal that you may or may not be aware of, it can really be so illuminating and life-changing, as you say, and de-shaming, because then you can say, okay, what is it that I'm trying to resolve through this behavior instead of, oh my God, I can't believe I ate that, I have no willpower.
Totally. The hashtag no shame, actually, it's a funny story. I was out to lunch with one of my old coworkers, and we were talking about the blog and the Instagram, and I was like, you know, I want to come up with, there's something here and I don't know how to take it to the next level. I want this to resound with so many other people. And I was like, I need to come up with a hashtag. And she's like, well, tell me about it. Like, what do you feel? I'm like, honestly, I feel like all my shame is gone. I want to remove all of the shame from everybody else. I want them to feel free. And that's literally where hashtag no shame came from.
I love it. I'm going to start using it.
Please
it's
do.
The best. Because we want to, that's what we both want to do from different perspectives, is take away the shame and help people realize, hey, there's a reason you're doing what you're doing. I like to call it a frenemy, because it is a friend in some ways. It is doing something for you. It is helping you numb or distract or express or something inside, but it's also an enemy because it's hurting you. But if you can find a different way to resolve the friend part, if you can respond to yourself differently, if you can recognize what's going on, everything changes.
Oh gosh, yeah, people don't even realize that. And I might be jumping the gun here, but, you know, when it comes to the friend or frenemy, it's how it affects you, not just your body or your weight or the food that you're intaking, but the fact that, like, it was affecting my relationships with my family and my friends. You know, I wouldn't go out with my friends on the weekends because I wanted to stay home and I wanted to binge. It had not really much to do with the food. It just had to do with the whole ritual of it, potentially.
Yeah, and sometimes I find that a lot of people turn to food instead of to people, because people can be unreliable, unpredictable, unavailable. Food is all of those things. And so in some ways it's safer to kind of have that relationship with your body and with food rather than take the risk of people.
And food does not talk back.
Or break up with you,
yep.
Or do anything that hurts you, judge you. So you've talked a little bit about how you were telling me about how it is to be a single guy on the dating scene, which already is like, oh, so
totally.
Hard.
Yeah.
But what are your particular challenges, or what's it been like to bring this to the table?
You know, I think the fact that we live in Los Angeles brings a whole other level of complexity to dating. So, and I also want to acknowledge that, you know, if you ask a woman, if you tell a woman that, you know, I struggle with dating, she just doesn't get it because women think that it's way more challenging for them, which absolutely in certain aspects it totally is, and for men, but I like to view everybody as an equal in this conversation.
I think it is. I think dating is difficult for humans.
Exactly.
Whoever you're dating, whatever your gender, whatever your person, the gender of the person that you want to date with, it's just hard to be vulnerable and put yourself out there and try to find a connection.
So, okay. So I was recently dating someone. We went on 3 dates, and the first 2 dates, I could not connect with her, and I love to connect with people. If I cannot connect with somebody, I don't understand why I can't connect, and I want to try to figure out why I can't connect. What I came to the conclusion was that I was inauthentic to myself, because during the dates, she was asking me, what do I do? And my day job is I work in technology, but what I really consider my job and my passion and my purpose is to be an advocate for men struggling with eating disorders and body image issues. I wasn't sharing this with her, though. So I said, I need to go out with her one more time, and I need to be 100% myself. Because I also felt like she was closed off as well. There wasn't a connection, and I felt like it truly was because I wasn't being authentic in sharing what I struggle with. So the third date, we went out, and I was like, you know what, this is going to be the last time that I go out with her. It's going to be it. I'm going to tell her what I do and how I feel and what I struggle with. And if she responds in a positive way, maybe we'll go out again. So within the first 2 minutes, we sat down, and I was like, listen, I got to talk to you. So you asked me what I do, and I've kind of been a little gray when I'm explaining it, but I'm an advocate for men struggling with eating disorders and body image issues because I have struggled with an eating disorder, and I struggle with body image issues. And I go around the country talking about it. I have a blog. I have an Instagram. This is really my purpose. This is what I want to do with my life. And that changed the entire dynamic of our entire date. It turned out to be the most incredible date. However, we have not seen each other since, but that's another story.
Oh.
No, that's okay, though. That's okay. But I realized that dating, you have to be your authentic self. And, you know, when I shared what I do and what I struggle with, it was not even a big deal. It wasn't a big deal. And I think that that's a huge message for so many other people, that when you share your story, somebody can immediately relate, whether it be with food or body image or not, they can relate. Thank you for being vulnerable. Now let me share something with you. So I think that we all have the power to change someone else's life just by sharing our story. So it's a truly a gift to have a story to share.
Absolutely. It is so true that when you share your vulnerability, it's like you give tacit permission to the other person to also be vulnerable. And we live in this culture that says, hey, don't be vulnerable. Be strong. Feelings are weak. You know, so what do you do when you have a feeling? You can't drop it. You can't think it away. You can't positive think it away. You can't let it go. You also can't stuff it down, but a lot of people try. So, you know, getting more comfortable in across all genders, getting more comfortable with what are we feeling? Because feelings are just reactions to situations.
Totally.
So, and then learning ways of responding to ourselves differently, then lunch becomes lunch, dinner becomes dinner, not a battleground.
Absolutely. And I'm not saying, you know, on your first date, just jump in, you know, feet first or head first and say, you know, I have an eating disorder, I struggle with this. I'm saying, feel the situation out. But on the flip side, you know, online dating is a huge other thing. I mean, we live in, you know, 2017. There's like 15 million dating apps, Tinder, Bumble, OkCupid. And one of the things that I struggle with having body image issues is my picture that's on these dating sites. I feel like I photograph well. I feel like I look better in photos than I do in person at times. And this is my own insecurity, by the way, and my own issues.
I have to say, I've seen his photos and I'm seeing him in person. I think you look great.
Thank you. I appreciate it. But every picture I have, I show it to my friends and I'm like, does this depict me well? Do I look like this? And my friends now, my close friends will be like, Ryan, no, like put a different picture up. It's either not a good picture or it looks maybe not like you do currently. So that's something I struggle with because I feel like I rather get rejected right off the bat if somebody doesn't like my picture than having to go meet them in person and then feel rejected. Mm-hmm. This is something that I struggle with. It's something that I'm currently working on, but it's a true thing.
Yeah, and I mean, it's so poignant what you're saying because you're saying something that a lot of guys think and feel, and I know because half my practice are men and I have men friends, but don't really talk about. And women tend to think that guys are just out there to judge them, or, you know, and they don't realize that guys are humans too, and humans have vulnerabilities and worries and insecurities, and that's That's all part of the thing. We're not, when we are thinking that the other person is judging us, often it's our own judgment sort of projected into them back at us. And so it's helpful to think about, well, what are your judgments of yourself that you may think that other people are thinking?
Totally. Yeah. I mean, we're all humans. We all function relatively the same way. We have brains, we have emotions, we have feelings. So it's a fair statement, having a lot of guy friends, that they are, the majority of them are insecure. I don't think it's fair to say that one person in this world is not insecure to a certain degree.
So. About something.
About something.
Yeah. So if anyone would like to join this great conversation we're having with Ryan Sheldon, the call-in number is 818-602-4929. That's 818-402-4929. So, what do you think that the main misconception is that you've come across?
The main misconception surrounding eating disorders?
Yeah, and men.
And men, that mm-hmm. men don't get them. Because mm-hmm. guess why? Eating disorders are emotions. They're all emotional eating, and men don't have emotions. Well, that's completely inaccurate. As we just talked about, men have emotions. In fact, I feel like men to some degree have more emotions because they bottle them up, because there's no venue for them to share them, because if they share them, they appear as weak. So I think that's the biggest one that I've encountered, is men don't get eating disorders. I was sharing a story with you before we got on live, and this woman reached out to me on Instagram. She's 35. She was mentioning how her husband has been struggling with bulimia, who's also around 35, for, it's been like, I don't know, 8 years or so. And she told me that he told his mother that he was suffering with bulimia, and his mother said, impossible. Only women get bulimia. I mean, it's so inaccurate. It's just, it's really sad.
It is really sad. In my book, Food for Thought, I shared a story that I also talked about with you, which is that I had a patient who had been struggling with bulimia since he was very young, 7 years old. And finally, in his 50s, he got up the courage and he said to his doctor, hey, I need to tell you something. I throw up every day. And the doctor did not ask him questions. The doctor just presumed this was some kind of physical issue and immediately ordered colonoscopy, endoscopy, every oscopy possible to figure out what might be going on with this person and why he would be throwing up every day. And my patient was too ashamed to tell him, oh, actually, I'm making myself throw up. And it was shortly after that he came in to see me, because he realized that it wasn't a physical thing. He needed to get to the bottom of why he was doing this.
It's incredible when you think about how much he went through and how much money he spent just to avoid being completely honest with his doctor.
Right. Just to avoid shame.
Just avoid shame.
Hashtag no shame.
Hashtag no shame.
Yeah. Yeah. So you talk about giving friends and family permission to help and support you in your recovery. Can you explain a little bit about what you mean by that?
Yeah, absolutely. It took me a long time to get to the place where I could give my family, my close-knit family and my close friends, permission to help me in my recovery. What I mean by that is, I used to go to dinner with my mom, and I would order, I would order everything. I would order like two things off the appetizer, two appetizers, three sides, a main meal, and also a salad. And that's not including the, you know, five loaves of bread that I would also eat. I told my mom, listen, if I ever order too much, and this is during, you know, recovery and when I've really come to terms with everything, if I'm ever ordering too much, please tell me, Ryan, wait a second. Eat this. If you're still hungry, then you can get more. She used to do this in the past, by the way, but I used to feel judgment from her. And it used to send me into a spiral. I mean, it's sent me into a spiral once that I just got up and left the restaurant. But now, after giving her permission, I actually take it as not judgment. I take it as her trying to really be supportive and help me, because I allowed her to. And when I share that story with people, they say that they're not at that place yet, but it takes work to get there.
Well, you also changed the meaning of what she said. You know, because before it was, hey, she must be judging you, and she's telling you, hey, she was shaming you. I'm sure that's how it registered.
Totally.
But when you told her, please do this for me, then it became something that was, you were doing for yourself with her as sort of your agent, rather than she was just independently deciding, hey, I'm going to tell you, you've had enough.
100%. And it's it's really liberating, actually, because now she's part of my recovery journey as well. So it's, I'm very open with her. Now, do I think she understands to 100% what I'm going through? No, but it's my job to educate her. When you struggle with an eating disorder, you really have to educate people on what those are, at least from your perspective and from what you've learned, because that's really...
Oh, absolutely. There are so many misconceptions. The main misconception, of course, being that it's about food.
Totally, 100%. It has nothing to do with food, FYI.
Right. It's a solution. Food is the solution to the problem, a temporary solution to the problem. It is not the problem. But so many people treat it as the problem, and that's why they don't get anywhere, because it's this vicious cycle. And every day going, I'm going to be good. I'm not going to do that behavior, whatever that behavior is. I'm going to be good, good, good. And then inevitably, because we live in a culture that doesn't teach us that it's okay to respond to ourselves in a kind, loving, nurturing, supportive way. Other people, yes, be supportive of other people, but I find that lots of people are very kind to other people and very unkind to themselves. And then so then the behavior happens for some reason, and then it just perpetuates itself in this cycle.
People would ask me, how could you be so hungry? How could you eat so much? I'm like, newsflash, I'm not hungry when I'm eating, when I'm spending $70 at Taco Bell, or when I'm eating five loaves of bread. I'm just nourishing something else.
And even, I hear from lots of people who say, I ate so much, my stomach hurt. This is something that I hear all the time. And I really teach them that they are converting emotional pain to physical. So by eating so much that it's painful, now it's not emotionally painful, now it's physically painful, and it is a lot easier to get rid of that physical pain than it is the emotional pain.
I used to eat so much that I would feel so sick to my stomach. And I'm not a religious person by any means, but I would be like, God, please make me feel better right now, and I will never do this ever again. This was a vicious cycle that happened. I mean, it was a weekly basis type of thing. Mm-hmm. I don't do that anymore, but that was something that I definitely did.
Yeah, there's always a reason. I mean, that's whether... If you're turning to food, if you're eating more than you know you should, if you're binging or just making bad choices, if whatever is going on with food, there is always... always a reason. And when you can figure out that reason and deal with it directly, everything changes.
Total, 100%.
And that's the beauty of that's why I love what I do. That's why I think you love what you do, is to be able to see people change their lives in a resonant way. I mean, not just change for the moment, but change forever. I sponsored something at the Staples Center a few months ago, and I had a table, and I was giving away the truth about sugar addiction. And this woman came up, and she was heavy, mm-hmm. about 50 pounds overweight, and she looked at me and she said, "Well, I'm a sugar addict." And I said, "Well, maybe you think you're a sugar addict. Why don't you, here, take my article, and that'll give you the truth about so-called sugar addiction." And she looked at me and she said, "Well, I've been in OA for 35 years, and I know that sugar is toxic, and that's the truth." And I just thought, how sad that this woman has spent 35 years feeling bad about herself because she eats sugar, rather than recognizing, hey, maybe there's a reason she's turning to sugar, and that is what you need to get to.
Totally. And to bring up OA, that I did go to OA before. And I have to be honest, it was a trigger for me. I felt like it was very triggering, so I try to avoid situations like that.
Well, look, I'm not shy about saying that I think 12-step for eating disorders and 12-step for especially for binge eating or compulsive eating of any kind is usually detrimental, because it makes you the problem. And it talks about, well, I don't want to go on a tangent, but there are many reasons why it actually makes you the problem, or the food the problem, when the food is not the problem. The food is a weed, and you got to get to that proverbial root to really get rid of it.
It's a symptom, I guess.
It's a symptom.
Yeah. No, that totally makes sense. Yeah.
It's a symptom of the problem. And when you look, thoughts and feelings lead to thoughts and beliefs lead to feelings, which lead to behavior. So if you think I messed that up, whatever that is, and you feel bad, and you don't have a way of nurturing and supporting yourself when you feel bad, then you're vulnerable to going to ice cream or something for comfort. But when you say, you know what, I messed that up, but it's okay, I don't have to get everything right, and let me learn from this experience, and yes, it was tough, but I'm going to be okay, then you don't feel bad, and then you don't need ice cream. Or let's just say you do feel bad. When you find new ways of comforting yourself other than ice cream, you don't use ice cream.
Totally,
You can totally, we were talking about this before, here's a caller. You can totally liberate yourself. Hold on, caller. Hi, caller. This is Dr. Nina. Who's this?
Nick. Remember me?
Nick. Regular caller, Nick. Hi, how are you? I was out on vacation last week, so I wasn't here, but I sure remember you.
Okay, good. You know, I first when I started the interview, I laughed at $71 at the fast food place. And then I continued to hear the interview. And I had an eating disorder, but it wasn't $71 or $41. It's just I overate. I just, you know, I wanted to confirm what you were saying about overeating, and until I realized that it wasn't the food. It really wasn't the food. I had to realize and talk and go through a whole process that the food wasn't the problem. The problem, what was going on with me, with my life, with my family, with my son, which I've talked to you about, and so on. And I just wanted to say that. I was, in case someone was listening and saying, well, you know, they have an eating disorder, you gotta have five orders of this or six orders of this and that. And it bothered me because, you don't need to have all that food to have a eating disorder. You can eat a lot of dinner. You can have a dessert or this or this or this, but not five orders. And I was actually a little bothered with it. Maybe I shouldn't call and say that, but you know, I had an eating disorder, and I'm still dealing with it. It hasn't gone away, but I deal with what things are going on in my life that aren't dealing well with it, and I feel I have an eating disorder, but I don't deal with it with the food. I deal with what the problems in my life and deal with it that way. And I just felt that I wanted to say that.
Nick, I'm going to let Ryan respond to that in a second, but I just wanted to say that I'm glad you called to make that point. I think he was speaking specifically of his experience, but you make a very good point, which is that if you have an unhealthy, unhappy relationship to food, it doesn't have to be $70 at Taco Bell or, you know, two appetizers and you know, it doesn't have to be a binge. It can of that magnitude. It can, if it's a problem for you, and if you're using food to resolve a problem, then it's a problem. And so I'm really happy that you called to make that point. Ryan, would you like to speak to Nick?
Yeah, absolutely. Hey, Nick.
Hi, how you doing?
I'm doing well, thanks. I appreciate you calling in, and I totally respect your opinion. I was, my story was with spending the $70 at Taco Bell, and ordering five of these items was actually pre-diagnosis of having an eating disorder. So it was before I received any treatment for it. And again, it's my experience. Everybody has it a different experience. But to your point, you know, now that I am getting treatment and, you know, living my life with having an eating disorder and body image issues, I truly acknowledge what you're saying, that it really does have to do with, you know, things that have happened in your life. And now, instead of going to food, I go to therapy and I try to resolve my issues, you know, that trigger me to eat, like things that have happened in my childhood. So I acknowledge what you're saying, and it makes total sense, and I appreciate you bringing that to light.
Hey, Nick, I have a question.
Thank you.
I have a question for you. As a guy, What are your thoughts about what it's like to be a man and struggle with food and body image and all of that, which I know that you do because you're a regular caller? What's it like to have someone like Ryan on the show talking about it and kind of bringing it, as he puts it, out of the closet?
I mean, it's difficult. It's difficult. I mean, it's I don't know. You're comparing it to be a woman in a body image and so on, but it's very, very important. I mean, go ahead. I just my body image is very, very important, and it's I think earlier you were talking about even sending pictures in for certain things. I've never taken a picture that I really liked into anything like that. I'm very critical of myself, and I try really hard to have a really good body image, but I'm still very critical of myself.
Well, hopefully getting less so. But I one of the reasons that I really was excited to have Ryan here was because, you know, you and Larry from Burbank are two regular callers here in the show, both guys, and people are always so surprised. They say, oh, you have these guys calling in your show. I thought it was just for you know, women that struggle with food and body image. And it's as you are talking about your experience and Ryan's been talking about his, as we can see, it is not a gender-specific issue. So.
And to quickly piggyback off of what you said, Nick, I just want to let you know that when it comes to my, you know, body image and pictures that have been taken, I have an Instagram account, and someone was asking me if I could post a before and after pic before I was in treatment and before diagnosis and after. And would you believe it took me like 3 weeks to find a picture because I don't have one picture from that period of my life, which is crazy when I think about it, because now I'm all on social media and I'm super active on it. But I definitely, you know, before I post a picture, I spend time looking at it because I still obsess over it at certain times. So I totally can relate to that.
Thanks, Nick, for your call. And we have another caller online with us now.
Thanks,
hi, caller. This is Dr.
Hi, Nina. Dr. Nina.
Hi.
This is Aria.
Hi, Aria. Welcome.
Hi. Thank you. I just wanted to share a little bit of my experience. I really appreciated your guest's experience because I think it, and Nick's experience, because I think it really goes to show how
Aria, we lost you.
Hello?
Oh, you're back.
Okay. I was just saying that I really appreciated your guest's experience and Nick's experience because it really goes to show how different disordered eating can present in different people. And in my experience, hello? Are you guys still
Oh,
in?
Yeah, we're here. We're nodding.
Okay.
You can't see us nodding. We're nodding. We're with you. Yes.
You know, because I think there's such a misconception. Like, for me, my binging would be, I would eat actually really healthy. I like vegetables. I like fruit. I'd have oatmeal in the morning. But my binging wouldn't, like, I would never eat fast food. But
oh. Aria, can you hear us? I think we've lost Aria. Hopefully she will call back.
Call back.
Please call back, Aria. We heard you talk about the morning, and then you were gone. In fact, let me try to call her. I think I can do that. Maybe not. We'll see.
It's working.
It's working. This is a first. It's but she may be in a bad... Okay. All right. Well, I think that... Hopefully, Aria.
Hello?
Oh, shit worked. I can't believe it. Oh. Okay. So, well, the last thing that we heard was that your binging was that you would eat really healthy in the morning and then.
Right. So I would really, you know, I would never eat fast food in my experience. Like, the way that my binging would present would be that I would eat chocolate and I would eat the whole bag. And that I couldn't, you know, and then I would eat that bag and get another bag. So it wasn't, you know, so it was really different because I would eat pretty healthy in general, but then I would binge on chocolate or on, you know, a sweet. So basically chocolate, not even really candy, but I think it just kind of illustrates how differently it presents and how frustrating it is when you get feedback from other people that say, like, oh, you should do this, or oh, you should do that, or oh, you should eat healthier, and it's like, I am, but it's like, I need to cope with the emotional piece that's making me, you know, binge on chocolate. And then the second part was, then obviously that would cause me to gain weight, and then my body image and self-esteem would be really low. And I really appreciated your guest's experience also with the dating websites, because it is a nightmare for me, at least. And what would happen would be that I would feel so bad about myself that I would not take any pictures. You know, so I don't have pictures of myself for like 5 years. And then when people would, like, you know, in family gatherings or like friends, I would, you know, find a way to like go to the bathroom in that particular moment, or go outside, or like, oh, I got a call. And so I'm really kind of absent from pictures of my life for like a long, long time. And I think in my recovery, like lately, I've been posing for pictures. I haven't been running away. And I think that's what kind of illustrates that I'm so much more healthy emotionally. So I just kind of wanted to share that with you guys.
Well, I think you make a lot of wonderful points, but I'm going to give Ryan a chance to respond.
Yeah, thank you for calling and sharing. I know that it can really be a challenge. It was a challenge for me to finally come out and talk about, you know, my issues. So again, I appreciate that. I think, you know, what resonates with me the most is how you avoided pictures for 5 years, because I find that touched like a struck a chord in me, because looking back in the period of my life where I was avoiding all of the pictures, it's kind of like you were absent in, you know, your family's life. You look back and you don't even know if you existed, and then it brings up all of these emotions. I don't know, that actually triggered me in a great way, but...
It's very poignant, especially when you said that you started showing up in pictures again. It's like you started showing up in your life again.
Exactly. And that's kind of how I knew that I was doing better, because it wasn't just about making healthier choices with the food. It was about, you know, being present in my life and not judging myself and not criticizing myself, and, you know, like, kind of noticing, like, I want to have pictures with people. Like, I want, like, those memories. I don't want to be absent from events or wondering, like, was I there? Like, yeah, I was. I was just hiding.
So here's, I have a couple questions. Would you actually just avoid the pictures, or would you avoid the events altogether?
Both. But definitely if I would force myself to get there, I would definitely avoid the pictures. And then another thing on the dating websites is I would put like pictures of like 8 years ago, so I didn't really look like me. And so then when I would get like a request, then I would have all this anxiety because I didn't look how I had like portrayed myself to look. And so it was really challenging to accept kind of where I am right now. So yeah, I mean, there's a lot that goes into it. It's not just like, you know, overeating, but it's also what it does to your body image and everything.
What it does to like your daily life. I mean, when I look back and think of like how I was hiding things and how I was trying to convince myself that things were in a certain way. I also used to put pictures on dating sites for me years ago. And my friends were like, Ryan, you need to take them off. You need to put accurate pictures on. But if somebody reaches out to me on, you know, Tinder, for an example, I'm like, listen, I just want to let you know I'm a little bit overweight, like a couple pounds overweight. I just let them know right off the bat. I probably shouldn't let them know right off the bat, but that's something that I just want them to know from the get-go that's what they're getting into, because I struggle with that as well. Are you, what was I going to say, have you shared this with your family?
With my mom and my sister, they're really supportive, and they're, you know, they were really happy when I started, like, you know, letting them take pictures of me again. They were, you know, because I would, like, tell them, like, okay, you can take the picture, but you can't post it on Facebook, you know, and only them. So when they kind of when I started letting them, like, it was my birthday recently, and I just, like, posed for all my family members who were taking pictures of me and stuff, it was just really liberating. It's, like, the only critic is, like, myself. No one else cares, you know, I mean, in terms of, they're like happy that I'm there.
No,
so yeah, I mean, I've done a lot of work.
No, that's awesome. Glad to hear it. That sounds amazing.
Oh yeah, I'm so happy to hear that you are really developing, I guess I would say, an appetite for life.
Mm-hmm.
And that really comes through, that you're ready to not just be an observer of life, but to be a participant. Because it's hard to be really present when you're observing yourself being present and thinking about how you look or how other people are perceiving you. But when you're not doing that, and when you're just there, then you could actually enjoy the experience and kind of fill up on the connections and the experience and the people.
It's so true.
Yeah, definitely. And I think it's gotten a lot better, but I definitely realize, I think I'm more hypervigilant to how other people talk about themselves, and it's so common that it's so negative and it's so oriented about their bodies. And I don't know, maybe it's because I've struggled with it, or I'm more sensitive to it, but or maybe it just happens a lot in LA, but yeah, it's everywhere.
Well, when I hear people talking about themselves, then I automatically think that they must be judging me as well. But the thing that I realize is that recently is that, you know, we can't help the way that people, you know, to piggyback off of we're our own worst critic, we can't help the way that people view us or how they, you know, what they think about us. That's their business. That's not our business. We can only help the way that we feel about ourselves. And really taking that to heart and understanding that has definitely been, you know, life-changing for me.
Yeah, and definitely changing kind of how things are perceived. Like the other day I was in the lunchroom and I was eating like cantaloupe, and a colleague said, like, oh, you're eating so healthy. That's such a healthy snack. And before I would have said, like, well, what does she mean? Like, is she calling me fat? And instead I was like, oh, she's making an observation, maybe thinking about something, you know, that was a good idea, or maybe a snack that she would like to bring. And I was just totally able to just catch myself and not go to that, like, negative place.
Yeah, because then when you do that mind reading and you think, oh, she said that I was eating a healthy snack, that means that she thinks I should be eating this way all the time, and she thinks this and she thinks that, then the thoughts are always very harsh and very critical, and then that makes you want to hide from people and turn to food even more. So it sounds like you definitely have been doing a lot of work in recognizing some of your perceptions of yourself and others, and clearly you've worked hard to change that, and it's great to hear you have a kind of a more loving, supportive relationship to yourself than apparently you used to have.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you for calling and sharing your story with us.
No problem. Have a great day, you guys.
Bye. Yeah, I mean, the idea that Aria touched on, that you expanded on a little bit, which is the idea that this is not just about mealtime. I mean, this is something that is pervasive. I remember when I was full on in my eating disorders, and I like, you know, if I went hiking, I've talked about this a lot, I wasn't thinking, oh, it's a beautiful day, I'm hiking with friends, this is a lovely experience, look at the view. I'd be thinking, okay, how many calories have I had? Will I lose weight by tomorrow or gain it? And it's like a 24/7
totally
obsession.
People, and in my experience, people don't realize that this actually consumes your life. I would go to work. I don't even know how I kept a job, to be completely honest, because I would go to work. First thing I would do is I would get on the computer and I would start looking at recipes that I was going to, you know, cook on my Friday night binge. One of my really close friends also has binge eating disorder, and we used to trigger each other for sure. And I would send her recipes. I would send 5 different recipes and be like, pick one recipe that you want to cook. She'd be like, I can't pick one. I'm like, great. That's the best answer ever, because we're going to cook all 5 of them. So I planned this whole binge. I had to order a deep fryer from Amazon, paid all this money for it to get to me early. I mean, this is like my days were spent looking up recipes, ordering things to binge. And then Friday would come, we would binge, I use the deep fryer. After the binge, we probably consumed 20,000 calories between the two of us. I'm not even joking. I felt so crappy about myself that I took that deep fryer that I had just bought and I threw it down the trash chute. I was like, I can't have this in my house. Like, I just can't do it. Like, all the money that was spent because of this as well.
And the thinking and the preoccupation. And that's what so many people come to me and they say, I don't just want to lose weight. I want to lose the preoccupation and the obsession and the thinking about it all the time. The thinking at breakfast, what am I going to have for lunch? At lunch, what am I have for dinner? At dinner, how am I going to not eat tonight?
Waking up at 3 a.m. just to go to the refrigerator to stare at the food. I mean, I would, with wholehearted confidence say that I spent 85% of my day thinking about food. It wasn't that I was hungry. It was everything about food. It was the process. It was the planning for it that really also got me going.
And it distracts you. I mean, it can distract you. I don't know about your particular situation, but it can distract you from something else. If you're thinking about what you're going to eat and planning the five recipes, you're not thinking about, oh, I don't have a girlfriend, or, oh, is this job really fulfilling to me, or, you know, whatever else
totally.
You might.
It preoccupied my time.
Yeah, and gave you a sense of agency, perhaps, like you're doing something, as opposed to, oh, I feel maybe helpless in certain parts of my life. And so that's a way of converting passive to active. Again, I don't know your situation, but this is something that I hear a lot, and that there's something about all this thinking about it is part of it. It's not just the eating it, it's the planning, it's the thinking.
Oh, yeah, that, I mean, when I would explain, you know, what it's like to live in my shoes for a day, it didn't have anything to do, it was very little with the consumption of food. It was it was so much more than that. It was the grocery shopping, it was the printing out the recipes, just figuring all these things out, thinking, you know, when I'm at work, here's what I'm going to do. I actually once came back from a vacation, and I planned my flight around a time where I knew this restaurant was open so I could go pick it up when I got back to LA. I mean, this is my life.
Right, but not anymore.
Not anymore. It was my life.
Yes, you have liberated yourself.
I've liberated
and now
myself.
You're working to liberate other people.
I am.
And that's a beautiful thing.
Yeah, no, it's been incredible.
And it's possible. It's possible to liberate yourself. I mean, I have a whole video on this about why I don't believe in recovery. Like you recover from the flu, you recover from a bad breakup, in my opinion. You don't recover from an eating disorder. You don't recover from disordered eating. You liberate yourself. You free yourself. That's why, you know, I call my program Win the Diet War. That you're in a battle with yourself, and when you change the way you relate to yourself, all of this goes away eventually. It doesn't happen overnight, and it takes way longer than anybody wants. But remember that it took you a certain amount of time. You out there who are listening, if you're struggling with this, it took you a certain amount of time to develop this strategy of coping. And so it's going to take you a little bit of time to kind of undo it and form a new strategy.
Oh, totally. I mean, I'm still in recovery. I'm not perfect. I still binge. Still, you know, struggle. I don't have a scale in my house because
good.
I had to throw it out because I would get on the scale 18 times a day. It got to the point where I had to put like sheets over my mirrors because I couldn't look in the mirror. I still struggle. I'm not perfect, but I'm definitely on the road to recovery.
Right. And I like to say that we're all perfectly imperfect, and that's
love
the
that.
Key because there is no perfect. And have you ever met a perfect person? I would imagine they'd be really boring.
Or narcissists. I don't know. They think that they're perfect.
Right. Again, really boring.
Yeah.
Have you talked to many narcissists? Not so fabulous. Not so fun. Can't get away from them fast enough.
No,
so, yeah. So just, you know, and think about, like, if we think about your friends,
mm-hmm.
you know, nobody loves their friends because they're perfect. Or no one would be like, oh, I'd love my friends so much more if they lost weight.
I love my friends for like all of their imperfections because it's just what makes them unique. And it's in those unique moments that you really bond.
Exactly. And somehow we have this one way of dealing with other people in our lives, like, oh, be yourself, who you are, you know, perfectly imperfect is wonderful, and yet I must be perfect.
Which goes to say that, you know, just for everybody out there that's listening, that you shouldn't feel shame, you know, when you share your story or your struggles. I mean, again, I think education is a huge component to this. So if you are struggling with an eating disorder or you think you're struggling, do your research before you share it with somebody. Because when they come back at you, because a lot of times they will, they'll be like, no, this is impossible. Only women suffer or struggle. No, be educated because...
And one way of doing that is you're an ambassador for NEDA, National Eating Disorder Association.
Not an ambassador, but I am. I do work with them.
Okay.
I write articles, contributing articles.
Okay. So maybe you can, speaking of that, why don't you share a little bit about that?
Yeah. I think that there's a bunch of different, there are a bunch of different resources out there. NEDA is my favorite resource, the National Eating Disorder Association. They actually have a helpline for anyone that is struggling or thinks that they're struggling with eating disorders. You can call in, or you can also go online if you don't feel like talking. And I think that they also have a number that you can text in. But I'm just going to get the number for you guys if you want to call in. The number is 1-800-931-2237. It's 1-800-931-2237. You can reach out. They're so awesome. They can actually help you find doctors. They can help you find treatment centers. And they're just there to really talk to you and hear your story out. Like I said, 30 million people in America are currently struggling or will struggle with eating disorders. 20 million of those are women. That means that 10 million are men. And then there's non-binary. I'm not sure the statistics around that. But it's such a it's an epidemic, and it's really something that, you know, you should not be ashamed of.
That is a wonderful point and a great way to end our talk today. So thank you so much for joining us today, joining me. This was really wonderful, and I really commend the work that you're doing, and it's so important and so relevant to so many people.
No, thank you so much for having me, Dr. Nina. It's been awesome, and thank you to the callers and the listeners.
Great. So for those of you who are listening, I'm here every Wednesday at 10 a.m. Pacific here on LA Talk Radio to give you the skinny on weight loss without dieting. You can also visit me at winthedietwar.com or find out about my online program at kickthediethabit.com. I'd love to hear from you, so send me a message. Email me, send me a message on Twitter or Facebook with any questions that you'd like me to cover on the show, or call in next week. I'll see you then. Bye for now.
You're listening to the Dr. You're Nina listening show to the with Dr. Nina Seville with Dr. Nina Seville on LA Talk Radio. On LA Talk Radio.